Chapter 10. The drive up to Beacon Hills is a long one, so Veronica has plenty of time to decide who she wants to talk to and what sort of cover she's going to present. She wants to avoid the parents when at all possible, but Chris and Victoria Argent are a must. There's no way she can get around talking to them. They were too involved. She wishes that Gerard Argent was still alive, so she could talk to him, but he isn't, and there's no evidence of foul play in his death. She stops halfway there to grab a quick bite to eat, and phone to check in with Logan. He's disappointed because the threatening video turned out to be some lame former household worker with a grudge, rather than another more exciting story. He grumbles about how smarmy Goodman is, and reminds her that she promised to be careful. She promises again. Adrian Harris seems to be her best bet. If he was coerced into that apology, he might have reason to talk. But nobody answers the door at his house. She peeks into the garage and sees that it's empty. Of course, if the students had been shipped off, it's possible that the teachers had gotten alternate jobs elsewhere as well. She decides to do a little research and see if she can find out where. But 10 minutes on her laptop leads her to an odd conclusion. There's no information anywhere on the Beacon Hills High School being shut down because of asbestos, or for any reason at all, for that matter. She frowns and plugs the address into her GPS. It's Saturday, so the parking lot is mostly empty, but not entirely. There are some sports teams on the field, and there's certainly no sign anywhere that renovations might be going on. She knows that some teachers will work on Saturday, either to grade papers or help students with remedial classes, or attend club meetings. So she parks and goes into the school to see if Harris is there. All the science classes are grouped together, and the rooms are easily identifiable by the equipment inside. Harris is indeed there, sitting at a desk with a stack of papers and a sour expression on his face. And strangest of all, there's a dog there. A smallish, curly-haired dog in a little blue vest sitting by the desk. It perks up when she enters and noses Harris's hand before he seems to have realized she's there. "Can I help you?" he asks. "You must be Mr. Harris, right?" she asks, smiling, hoping to put him at ease. "My name's Veronica. I'm a psychology student at Hearst College." Harris gives her a somewhat skeptical look. "And?" "I'm doing my thesis on..." Veronica falters for a moment. The lie she had prepared to tell, that she was researching the use of service animals in schools, seems a little odd in light of the fact that Harris now has a service dog himself. But she doesn't have a better lie prepared, and that was what his lawsuit was about. "On service animals for PTSD. He looks surprised for a moment. "I read about your lawsuit against the Stilinski family last year, and I have nothing to say about that lawsuit," Harris says, slapping a notebook shut. "Everything I have to say about it was published in my statement at the time."
"It seems odd that you dropped it so suddenly," Veronica says.
"I did so on the advice of my lawyers."
"So the Stilinski family had nothing to do with it?"
Harris gathers up his papers in a sweeping motion. "As I said, I have nothing to say about the lawsuit, and now I'll have to bid you good day." He shoves the papers into his briefcase and heads for the door.
"Is there a reason you don't want to discuss it?" Veronica asks, following him.
The dog is padding along at his heels. Harris keeps walking, increasing his pace.
"It was a foolish, vindictive lawsuit filed by a foolish, vindictive man. Is it really so surprising that I have no desire to discuss that chapter of my life?"
"It's a little surprising that you have a service dog," Veronica says.
"May I ask what he's for?"
"You may ask questions until you turn blue in the face," Harris says. They're reaching a crowd of teenagers in athletic gear as they exit a side door in the school. "That will not change the fact that I have nothing to say."
"Did the Stilinski family pressure you into dropping the lawsuit?" Veronica asks. She's aware she's running out of time, that in a minute he'll be in his car and the interview will be over. He says more than he intends with his body language, and his tight, pinched face. There's no time for delicacy.
"Were you afraid that you would disappear like Peter Hale and Vivian Nazario?"
Harris walks in silence for another minute, and then reaches his car, an older model with a bumper sticker that Veronica can't help but admire. "Imagination is more important than knowledge." Then he turns to her and says abruptly, "Young lady, you are barking so far up the wrong tree that you are in the stratosphere. This conversation is over." He gets in his car and backs out of the space with a squeal of tires. Veronica swears in frustration. She heads back into the school, thinking maybe she can find one of Stiles' classmates to talk to. But before she can approach them, a teenager in jeans and a t-shirt walks over to her. He's handsome, in a sullen, angry sort of way. "Hey," he says, "were you asking Harris about Stilinski?" "Yes," she says, smiling brightly. "I'm a psychology student, doing my thesis on..." "Yeah, whatever," he says. "You want the scoop on Stilinski? Then come with me." Veronica is a little suspicious of this, but she has her taser, and she's probably done stupider things. So she follows him out to a shiny silver sports car and gets in. "So, my name's Veronica," she says. He gives a little grunt. "Jackson." "Jackson. That's familiar. She's heard them mention him a few times. A friend of Danny's, but none of the others particularly like him. Especially not Scott and Stiles." "So, what's the scoop?" she asks. "You'll find out," he says, which doesn't make her feel any better. But he doesn't try to drive her out of town and leave her in a ditch. They're only in the car for a few minutes before they pull up to a Beacon Hills veterinary clinic. Then he parks the car and goes inside. "Dr. Deaton?" he calls out.
"Hello, Jackson." A middle-aged black man comes out of the back and gives Veronica a questioning look. "How can I help you, miss?" "I'm not sure," Veronica says, wondering why Jackson had brought her here. She switches up her story. "I'm a psychology student doing my paper on urban legends. I was doing some research here about the Hale family and the Stilinski family. Jackson heard me ask about them and thought you could give me the scoop." I see."
He smiles at her. "Jackson, why don't you get to work? It's time for Peaches and Sully to be walked."
"'Kay,"
Jackson grunts, and heads into the back. "Jackson is my assistant here," Deaton says, still smiling. "I've lived here a long time, and I was friends with the Hale family. That's probably why he brought you here. He's nicer than he seems, and he does like a pretty face. So, what exactly is your thesis on?" Veronica is a little taken aback by Deaton's warm attitude. It's such a shift from what she's been getting.
Well, there's this online mythos around Beacon Hills involving a werewolf pack, and how it explains some of what's happened here. I figured I would come get the rational explanations for what happened, and use it to disprove the legend. I'm working off some other famous urban legends with mundane explanations, like the Vanishing Roanoke Colony, the Hopkinsville Goblin Case, and the ghost ship Mary Celeste.
You've done your research, Deaton says, obviously impressed. Why Beacon Hills?
Well, partly because it's local, but mostly because it hasn't been solved, Veronica says. I'm referring mostly to the disappearance of Peter Hale.
Ah, but the disappearance of Peter Hale has been solved, Deaton says. He left town under his own steam after finishing his work here.
I've read about the murders, Veronica says, but didn't he kill at least one person who hadn't been involved in the fire?
His nurse, yes, Deaton says, and gives a little shrug. Popular theory is that she knew too much, as they say, or tried to stop him. Yes, he killed her the same night that he killed Kate Argent, attacked Lydia Martin, and abducted the sheriff's son.
Veronica is taken aback. That hasn't been mentioned in any of the police reports.
Abducted? I hadn't...
Of course not. It never made the news. The sheriff, of course, threw his entire department behind finding his son, and so they did. But Peter Hale wisely left town.
Why would he have kidnapped Stiles?
Deaton smiles widely.
So you do know him.
Veronica freezes, and then inwardly curses. Deaton had tricked her. He hadn't used Stiles' name, and the nickname had never appeared in any of the papers. She could only know the nickname if she had met him. Okay, yes, I...
You aren't trying to solve the mystery of Peter Hale, Deaton says, his voice almost kind. You're trying to solve the mystery of Stiles Stilinski. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but you aren't going to find anyone here who will help you.
So there is a mystery to solve, Veronica says.
You wouldn't be here if you didn't think so, and I doubt I could convince you otherwise at this point, Deaton says. You've clearly done a great deal of research, but I would be very careful if I were you. People in Beacon Hills don't like people who ask questions.
I'm noticing that, Veronica says. But people who give the Stilinski family trouble tend to disappear.
So they do, Deaton says. But you are asking the wrong question. You shouldn't be asking why they disappear or what happened to them. You should be asking why they were bothering the Stilinski family to begin with.
Okay, Veronica says. Then I'll ask that question. Why?
Because the monsters in the dark will always want to put out the light. Deaton holds his hand out to the door. Good luck with your paper, Veronica.
Thanks, Veronica says, and turns to go. It's not until she's outside that she realizes she had never told Dr. Deaton her name. Going back in seems pointless, however. She's uncomfortably aware that Deaton learned a lot more from her than she learned from him. She curses a little, and then realizes she has no way to get back to where she left her car. She's wondering if this town even has a taxi service when Jackson comes back outside, looking just as sullen as earlier.
I'll drive you back to the school.
Thanks, Veronica says, and gets in the car. She tries asking a question or two, even one about the weather, but gets no answers. Jackson says nothing until they pull up next to her LeSabre.
I hate Stilinski, he says, and Veronica perks up. This could be interesting. He's a jackass. He stole my girlfriend. He's better at lacrosse than I am. He doesn't know how to fucking shut up. But he also saved my fucking life. Don't fuck with him. You'll get way more than you're asking for.
What do you...
Get out. Veronica sets her jaw, but does so. Jackson pulls out of the parking lot in his shiny silver sports car, leaving her fuming in the dust. There has to be someone in Beacon Hills who's willing to talk to her. She tries the Argent house. The door is answered by a teenager with a mop of unruly dark hair and thin-framed glasses. He blinks at her guilelessly and says, "Are you selling something?"
"No," Veronica says, giving him a disarming smile. "Actually, I'm looking for Chris or Victoria Argent. Can I speak with one of them?"
"They aren't home," he replies.
"Well, maybe you can help me out," Veronica says. She hasn't seen anything about Allison having any younger siblings, so she's a little confused by who this kid is and why he's there.
"Do you live here?"
"Yeah, why?"
"I'm a psychology student doing my thesis on urban legends," Veronica says. "See, there's this online mythos surrounding Beacon Hills, and how there's a werewolf pack here, and that explains some of the disappearances and stuff that have happened around here. Do you know anything about that?"
The teenager is frowning at her.
"Maybe," he says, and shuffles nervously. "I think you'd better talk to my uncle." He calls over his shoulder. "Uncle Chris, there's someone here to see you."
"I thought you said he wasn't home," Veronica says.
"So we're both liars. So what?" he asks.
Veronica frowns and is about to come up with a clever retort when a man walks up behind the teenager. He's middle-aged, with a tall frame and a fair amount of stubble. She gets through, "Hi, I'm a psychology student doing my thesis on urban legends," before he elbows past the boy and slams the door in her face without a word.
"Or not," she says, feeling miffed. She hadn't planned to talk to any of the other parents, because she hadn't really known what she could possibly ask them. But now she has a new angle to play. The school obviously isn't closed due to asbestos, and yet, there all the kids were, down in Neptune. So what had their parents been told about where their children were going, and why? Obviously, the kids hadn't all simply disappeared,
And they weren't using fake names either. So she pulls up the phone listings for Beacon Hills, knowing she might not be able to find everyone. There are 18 listings for Martin, 7 for Reyes, and 3 for Boyd. But only one Mahalani, one McCall, and one Leahy. One of the Boyds listed is Vernon, and she knows that the Boyd she knows is Vernon. It seems likely he was named after his father. She plugs all the addresses into her GPS. Nobody answers at the Mahalani house. Boyd's door is answered by a 14-year-old boy who says his parents aren't home, and Veronica doesn't want to grill him. Roger Leahy opens the door and answers with an angry, "Don't know, don't care," when she tries to ask about Isaac's whereabouts. Scott's mother gives her a sympathetic smile and says, "I'm sorry, honey, I can't help you." Veronica cross-references to figure out which Martin and Reyes' houses to go to. Lydia's mother is unlisted, however. She finds the Reyes household, and a middle-aged woman answers the door and says the exact same thing as Scott's mother. Veronica is pretty sure someone warned her that she was coming. Frustrated beyond belief, but now more certain than ever that these people are hiding something, Veronica looks to see if Derek Hale's number is listed, thinking maybe she'll check out his place. The Stilinski house is silent, empty, and completely normal. She doesn't dare break in. Derek Hale owns a surprising amount of property in town. A studio, a warehouse downtown, and a huge swath of land bordering on the preserve. She finds a number of housing and building permits filed for that land the previous year, and presumes he built a house on the territory. So that's where she goes. There's a gate barring the road, and it's locked with a heavy chain and a padlock. So it's obvious to Veronica that she won't be driving any further. She pulls her car off to the side of the road, gets out, and slings her bag over her shoulder. The fence is too high to climb, but she notices a gap in it, right next to a no trespassing sign. She doesn't let it bother her. The owners of the property are out of town, after all. And God knew she'd broken and entered worse places than this. So she tucks her body through the gap and starts down the road. The forest is quiet, a little too quiet, a little spooky. It's probably just nerves. She's a city girl. It's been a long time since she was somewhere so unreservedly wild. Suddenly, she wishes she had taken Mac up on her offer to go camping the previous summer. It doesn't help that the sun has set now, and the forest is way darker than anywhere in Neptune ever gets. She's not sure what she was expecting. But another fence isn't it. This one's sturdier, wires instead of chain link, and the low hum that's sure to mean electricity. An electric fence in the middle of the forest. She's just standing there with no idea what that could possibly mean when a rough voice asks, "What are you doing here?" And she turns. It's the same man she saw at the Argent house, dressed in jeans and a leather jacket. He's holding a rifle, but it's not pointed at her. Veronica forces herself to smile, and knows it looks a little nervous. But that's okay. Nervous is still appropriate when alone with a man holding a gun of any sort. "Still a psychology student, sir. Still researching the birth of urban legends." "Cut the crap. You're trespassing."
"Well, yes, but I have no intention of damaging anything because I know how to look with my eyes, and not my hands. So it's really not a capital crime. Besides, aren't you trespassing too?"
"No." Chris looks sour. "I'm looking after the property at the request of the owner, while he's out of town." He gestures with the rifle, still not pointing it at her, but it's obviously meant to be a threat. "Now, tell me why you're really here. Are you a hunter? What family are you with?"
Veronica takes a step back, then another. You're the one with the rifle. Why are you asking me if I'm a hunter?"
Chris's brow furrows slightly. "Okay, but you still haven't told me what you're doing here."
His phone gives a little chime, and he glances at it.
"Any time now, Blondie."
"I did tell you the truth. I wanted to see the property. Check it out. The mysteries of Beacon Hills."
She holds up her hands and wiggles her fingers, trying to play it all up like she's just trying to get an impressive grade on a cool assignment, but that she doesn't really believe any of the urban legend part of it. Although this guy was really not making her feel any more secure in how normal everything was.
Uh-huh. Chris folds his arms over his chest. You do realize that Stiles knows you're here, right?
First her eyes narrow, then her arm drops to her side, to be closer to her bag and her taser if need be.
And how would he know that?
Well, for one thing, I called him, Chris says. Deaton told him. I'm willing to bet Jackson told him. Secondly, see that?
He asks, and Veronica instinctively turns to look.
Yeah, that's a camera. You really thought a property with an electric fence wouldn't also have a surveillance system? He knew you were here the moment you put your foot on the property.
Veronica bites on her lower lip. She's caught, and she knows it. But she isn't going down without a fight.
So, she says, hunters?
Really? Chris says. Your response to that is to try to pry even deeper?
Surprising, Veronica. He lets out a chuckle.
I can sort of see why Stiles' warning about you basically consisted of, she's like a prettier version of me. Now, you're on private property. Are you going to let me escort you off private property, or do I need to call the police?
If I let you escort me off, will you answer my question?
She figures she may as well try to bargain.
How about, if you let me escort you off the premises, I won't tell Stiles you kept pushing for answers?
She makes a pouting face and falls into silence. That's as close to an agreement as he'll get. He gestures again, and she starts walking back towards the car. Apparently, he wasn't lying about having been asked to look after the property. He has a key to the padlock on the outside gate. He opens it and lets her through, locks it after her. Then he turns and looks at her.
You should stay away from this, he says. What happened here is over and done with. There's no mystery to solve anymore.
That's a lie, and we both know it, Mr. Are you a hunter?
Chris shakes his head.
Don't say I didn't warn you, he says, and points to her car. I'm going to follow you out of town.
Veronica unlocks and opens her door, gets in the car, and slams the door shut with prejudice. True to Chris's word, his headlights are in her rear view until she's at least 20 miles out of Beacon Hills. Then he takes a turnoff and vanishes. She considers going back just to spite him, but figures that would be petty.
So instead, she drives back to Neptune, thinking things over.
She feels like she's learned a lot, but instead of getting answers, all she has is more questions. Why the electric fence? Why had Derek specifically asked someone to look after the property while they were gone? And on that note, why an Argent? If the multi-generational feud had any merit to it, Chris Argent was the last person Derek should have chosen to keep watch on the Hale family property. Yet, there he was, with keys and everything. If the school in Beacon Hills wasn't really closed, what the hell were all those teenagers doing in Neptune? It's late when she gets back, so she goes to bed and sleeps restlessly. She's promised her dad she'll clean up around the office, since the next day is Sunday. He's there for a half hour of donuts and coffee before he gets an urgent tip and leaves in a hurry. Logan shows up around noon, says he missed her, and tries to persuade her to make out with him in the bathroom instead of doing her work, or telling him about what happened in Beacon Hills. She's tempted to give in. Filing and dusting is not her forte. When the door opens with a jingle, and she shoves him onto the sofa with a "don't misbehave in front of the clients" sort of look. But it's not a client. It's Stiles, with Derek behind him. The older man is as stone-faced as ever, but Stiles is pissed. She's seen him with that same fidgety tension before, usually when there have been homophobes or assholes around. He forgoes pleasantries and launches straight into, "Why were you snooping around in Beacon Hills?" Veronica considers what to say, but in the end, there's really no answer besides an honest answer.
"I don't like mysteries, and I don't believe that Peter Hale is sipping piña coladas on a beach somewhere."
"Oh, is that so?" Stiles says. "You solve one murder and suddenly you're Nancy fucking Drew? How is what happened to Peter Hale any of your fucking business?"
Veronica opens her mouth and closes it, then settles for looking mutinous. She just doesn't have the words for how she wants to trust Stiles so badly, but something is wrong. Until she knows what it is, she won't feel safe. But Stiles is right. Peter isn't her business. She has no excuses and no reasons, so she stays silent.
Did it ever occur to you that maybe, just maybe, everyone who was involved knows what happened to Peter, and they're all just much fucking happier letting it rest?
Stiles continues to rant furiously.
And that maybe the only thing you're doing is making a bunch of people really upset? That...
Derek moves around from behind Stiles, so he's almost standing in front of the younger man. While he's very much in Stiles' view, he's also careful not to cut off the line of sight between Stiles and Veronica. Stiles' temper is just climbing, and Derek has no intention of challenging the wolf instinct that he knows is riding right underneath the surface. Stiles. He reaches out a hand to Stiles' shoulder, but stops himself halfway there. Can you just let me talk to her? He can feel how angry Stiles is. Feel the surge of protective instincts, that overriding need to defend the pack, reverberating down the bond. He lowers his voice so it's barely audible. You like her. Let me try, okay? Stiles only barely manages to hold back a snarl. He knows that Derek is right, and that he's dangerously close to saying something he'll regret later.
Fine! Fine!
He turns and slams his way out of the office. Everything is quiet for a moment, and then Logan gets up and follows him without a word, giving Derek and Veronica some privacy. Derek lets his arm drop and hopes that Logan either doesn't try to talk to Stiles, or if he does, he isn't stupid enough to try to touch him. He turns and looks over at Veronica to see what, if anything, she's going to say or do now. Seeing his gaze on her, feeling inexplicably stung, Veronica says, "What?" Derek shoves his hands into his pockets. He's learned it makes him less intimidating. "I take my privacy pretty seriously. That's why we have all the security measures on the property. Stiles doesn't like it when people upset me."
"I wasn't trying to upset anybody," Veronica says. I just need to know the truth. Something about you guys doesn't add up, and I can't just let it go. I don't know why not, but I can't."
Derek looks up at the ceiling, in clear exasperation. "And what is knowing our secrets going to gain you?"
"I don't know," Veronica says. "I don't. But the last time people kept secrets from me, my best friend was murdered."
Derek's jaw clenches for a few moments. "You'll stop snooping if you find out what happened to Peter?"
Is it okay to say I'll try? Because I can't just stop being who I am. I know, I've tried.
Derek snorts. He can actually understand that. "I think I actually believe you." Her heartbeat had been steady. A little fast overall, but steady. "So, you really want to know what happened to Uncle Peter in the end?"
"Yes, for fuck's sake, I really want to know."
Derek's silent for a long minute. His hands come out of his pockets, fingers tapping at his thighs, while he marshals his thoughts. He eventually leans over and steals a sheet of legal paper off the desk and starts folding it and worrying it. He doesn't look at her while he speaks. "I buried Peter, properly, with his family, with all the respect that was due. Like he was the man I remember growing up with, instead of the monster that Kate Argent turned him into. All Kate left of us was two scared kids and a thing that looked like Peter but wasn't. The real Peter died in the fire along with his wife and his son, his sister and his nieces and nephews." Now he does look up. "So the fact that he's finally been laid to rest isn't that much of a tragedy, is it?" Veronica stands with her mouth half open for a minute, before slumping into her seat and saying,
"And now I look like the biggest psycho bitch on the planet."
"No," Derek says. "I've met some psycho bitches. You are not one of them. Not by miles. You just have some issues, and you don't know when to quit.
Those aren't fundamental flaws of being, he says, studying the origami wolf that he's creating.
People are dying here. Will you look me in the eye and tell me that you have nothing to do with that?
Derek looks her squarely in the eye, which really isn't the most comfortable thing in the world.
We have nothing to do with it.
Veronica lets out a breath.
Okay, and asbestos? Fuck, I'm prying again, aren't I?
Yep. Derek's almost amused at her complete inability to curb herself. Apparently, it's like asking Styles to sit still. But you can have it as a freebie, from one screwed up person to another.
Okay, thanks. I'm sorry. Shit, I don't know what I mean.
Derek rolls his eyes. The job was a good opportunity for Papa Stalinsky, but Styles worries. We all do. We've gone through a lot of rough times together. People have been hurt, sometimes seriously, so we worry. Whoever went would worry about the people who stayed behind, and whoever stayed behind would worry about whoever went. So we stuck together. But that doesn't go over well with large groups of high school students, so we fibbed.
Given the rumors about his scars, I guess I can totally see that, Veronica says.
She rubs both hands over her face.
Look, I'm sorry. I guess after Peter Farrer was murdered, and then I saw Styles, the way he fights, the way he enjoyed that, maybe I had a bit of a freak out.
He likes to cut loose every now and then, Derek shrugs. He never bullies or picks on people. What he did was fair. They all had a chance. He would have let them walk away.
It's not that he did it, Veronica says. It was the look on his face.
I bet your friend Weevil enjoys the occasional fight, too. Derek can't force himself to be concerned about this one. It's the wolf in them.
Yeah, I guess so.
Veronica can't quite bring herself to mention the crimson light in Styles' eyes, or the way he had moved so quickly that even the camera couldn't keep up. She's asked enough questions for the day.
So, shall we go find our boyfriends?
Derek shrugs and gestures towards the door, sliding the origami wolf into his pocket. Let's go. Logan has to jog to catch up to Styles, but at the last moment thinks better of the idea of grabbing him by the arm.
Hey! Hey! He calls out.
Styles turns into the alley next to the Mars Investigations office and stops.
What?
He says flatly.
It's not you. You get that, right?
Logan rubs at the side of his nose and feels awkward, trying to explain and apologize for his girlfriend.
What, that Veronica is so freaked out by me that she's snooping around my private life because she's convinced I murdered someone?
Yeah, actually, Logan says, with a shrug.
Oh, okay, sure. That makes perfect sense.
Look, it's just the way she is. I'm convinced she can't even help it. Do you have any idea how many times she's flipped her shit at me? He leans back against the alley wall. Styles' eyes narrow.
Is that supposed to make this okay?
No, I guess not. But she does like you, and I think that makes it even worse. She likes you, so now she has to make sure that there's nothing hidden about you that's going to come out of nowhere and hurt her. Logan's hands flex nervously. How much do you know about what happened with Lily?
Not much, Styles says, and adds somewhat pointedly, it wasn't my business.
Touché, Logan gives him that half smile. Well, the upshot is that pretty much everyone around Lily kept secrets and told lies, and it almost ended in her murderer getting away with it. And most of those secrets managed to kick Veronica either in the teeth or in the ass. Her father lost his job, she turned into the pariah at school, her mother left her family, and my father nearly managed to murder her. He looks away and rubs his hands over the back of his head. Girl is tough as nails and always comes back swinging, but she's picked up some issues. For the first time since he showed up, Styles looks like he might be willing to listen. She's just gotta know, huh? She has to, even when she wants to let it go. Styles rubs both hands over his hair.
I don't even know what she's really freaking out about.
Does she really think I had anything to do with those kids that were killed?
Logan snorts.
No. Then he pauses for a moment. No, she doesn't. But that won't stop her from checking, because no one had any reason to think my father killed Lily either. Hell, it was more likely that I had, or Duncan. And trust me, she suspected each of us in turn. So no, she doesn't think you had anything to do with it. But she still needs to see that, you know?
Yeah, I guess, Stiles says, with a sigh. We all have our own ways of coping with trauma. The problem is that her way of dealing with it steps on my way of dealing with it.
Well, maybe your boyfriend said something magical to her. He does know how to talk, right? More than one or two words? I'm honestly not sure.
Ha, very ha, Stiles says.
And then because he can.
I've found better uses for his mouth.
Logan seems to consider this.
Yep. Now I'm 200% sure I'm straight. That did nothing for me.
All for the best, Stiles says.
He glances up, because he can hear the jingle of the bell, which means the door to the office is opening. And fuck it. There's no use trying to keep secrets from these people anyway. They know he's weird. He's done a piss-poor job of hiding it, apparently. So he heads back out of the alley to find Veronica and Derek coming out, and glancing around for them. He shuffles his feet for a minute, and then walks over. He bumps shoulders with Derek, but then looks at Veronica, and then away.
Hey!
Hey. Veronica rocks nervously back and forth on her heels.
So, I'm kind of a bitch, and I'm sorry about that. I'll try to stop. I'm probably gonna screw that up. The stopping part. But I'll try. You can remind me.
Okay. Stiles gives a little shrug. Sometimes I forget that there are other people in the world as messed up as me. Veronica raises a hand.
Right there with you, she says.
And Derek and Logan are both relaxing a little.
So, Stiles says, drawing the word out, rubbing his hand over his hair. Are we going to figure out who killed Peter and Marcos, or what?
Veronica smiles at him.
Yes, she says. Yes, we are.